This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. There was a time when film critic T.T. Sternenzi had little use for reality TV, describing himself as a smug observer of the genre. He feels differently now and has a list of unscripted reality shows that have become must-watch television for him. He explains those shows and why he watches them in his latest essay on our website, WVXU.org. Film critic T.T. Sternenzi joins me now to discuss his change of heart and make the case for these guilty pleasures. Welcome back, TT.
Great. Thank you. Really glad to be here. Yeah. I can't wait for this conversation.
That's right. It's going to get juicy. I feel good about this. How did you go from reality TV skeptic to a fan?
Well, I mean, I think part of what it is, and I mentioned it in the essay, is the idea that I've had the opportunity to pay attention to documentary filmmakers. And again, I mentioned Julia Riker because the OTR International Film Festival is doing an event on Thursday night to celebrate her life and work. And going back and looking at some of her work and some of the pieces that are going to be part of our program, I saw very clearly this interesting line between what she was doing with, you know, the feminist movement and the labor movement stuff that she was doing, in terms of how you could sort of pull yourself or a subject out of a story and have them comment on things, that I was kind of like, huh, you see this all the time in these reality shows. And I make fun of it in these reality shows, but it's like, wait a minute, there's a real root for this that is now fascinating, and it makes me think more about the subjects in a different way.
See, I appreciate that you're making this sound all scholarly and intellectual, but there's another side to this coin, TT. I mean, let's get real. Julia Riker, all respect, and what she's doing is, I think we can all agree, way classier than what we're about to talk about.
Yes.
Okay, so tell me about what's really going on. Like, what sat you down? And I know this is love-related and started you on this path.
Yes. In certain cases with a couple of these shows that deal with relationships, yes, it was really more the idea that, again, my wife and I met through online dating. And we're about to celebrate our 18th wedding anniversary. So for us, there's always this idea that, wait a minute, we didn't meet like other people generally meet. And to see shows that are based on how people meet that are outside the normal, typical, oh, I saw you, you know, in a room, da-da-da-da-da, or I met you at a bar, or whatever, the social experiment aspect of it all is really fascinating to me. And when we watch them together, which we do watch the two that are on the list that I wrote about, we watch those together, we are usually sitting there kind of thinking, well, wait a minute, how would we handle would we still be together if we met like that?
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, we're like, no, we probably wouldn't be together.
All the social media and the cameras and the awful things these people. Well, before we get into this list, and it is quite a list, I know you're devoted to some of these shows. You got to watch them when they come on. Has this become something you talk about with the guys, like not just your wife, but do you find yourself on the basketball court talking with your guy friends about this?
Maybe not the basketball court.
Because you're trash talking?
Shout out to all the guys I play ball with. Okay. On Wednesdays. No, okay. We are not talking about any of these reality shows. But I do find myself, especially with some of the food shows and definitely the last show, Master Distillers, I do share that and tell people about it a lot. Because for me, those shows, beyond the reality kind of genre fun of them all, also offer real interesting insight into food and culture, or in the case of Master Distiller, just the whole creation of spirits. And learning about that process is just as interesting to me as the personalities that are on the show.
Okay. Well, let's get into the list. I'm going to start in the order in which you list them. And I don't know that there's anything anyone can learn from these first couple, but maybe I'm wrong. First on your list is Love is Blind.
How many followers do you have on Instagram?
Okay, bro.
I'm in love with a man I haven't even seen.
I don't really give the nice guy a try, but I really want something real.
Have you ever been close to getting married?
Well, I was married.
I love him so much.
I'm so happy for you.
Wow. Okay. That audio is courtesy of Netflix. Gotta confess, I've never watched this, but my younger daughter does. how real is this reality TV show? I mean, haven't some of these people been caught lying about their relationship status when they go onto this show?
Okay, I'm embarrassed just from listening to that clip.
But it's okay. You're among friends here. It's okay.
But yes, there are some issues. And again, I feel like in the case of the two dating shows, the current seasons of these shows have really blown up and caused an awful lot of drama that ordinarily is not always there. Like in the case of Love is Blind, the social experiment premise of it all is basically the idea you take 15 or 16 sets of people, put them in pods, have them kind of go through speed dating. They can't see each other. They're in separate pods. They're really nicely kind of, you know, set up and they're comfortable and you can just relax or whatever else. And you just talk to people. And the idea is, can you connect with someone just through conversation before actually meeting them? But then the problem is the only way you get to meet the person that you think you're interested in is you have to propose to them. And then eventually you have to go through the process of imagining that you're going to marry this person after only knowing them for a handful of weeks and having only seen them in person for maybe 2 weeks. That, again, stakes are really high, yeah. Which, again, going back to what I said before, my wife and I watch it sometimes and we're just kind of like, well, maybe we wouldn't have made it if we had done that.
Well, it kind of is all this don't judge a book by its cover thing, right? I mean, In theory, it's this beautiful concept. You get to know what's in a person's heart and how they think before you see them. But I mean, that just doesn't seem to be working out for a lot of these people.
No, it doesn't. Although I will say, again, the earlier seasons, there was some purity in a way, if I can use that word and not sound really weird.
Yeah.
But there was just the idea that people went in for what we can only assume were the right reasons. They were curious. They had tried dating through normal situations. They'd even tried online dating probably. And they hadn't met a match. So they were kind of like, well, maybe we are doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. So let's take some of the issues and concerns that we have about how we've done this in the past. We take some of those things away, like the physical looks of people. Mm-hmm. If you don't see them, but you connect with someone, you love listening to them, you hearing their stories, finding out more about them, you love their sense of humor, is that going to be enough? And maybe are you going to meet someone this way that you wouldn't have paid as much attention to if you saw them in a bar or wherever people meet each other? I have no idea how people meet each other because I've been married too long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but now some of these contestants are trying to get on the show just so they can have careers as influencers, right?
Yes. Yes. And that's that part of it kind of bothers me because I don't watch the show and then I'm not on Instagram. Well, I am now, but I'm not on it enough to like know how to find people in that way.
Yeah.
So, but my wife does, and she does. She'll look it up and she'll say, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe we shouldn't have access to this information about these people so early in the process.
Mm.
You know, maybe once the season is over, then you can go and look and find people. Because otherwise, if you're able to find them earlier, that does create an incentive for people to go on the show to sort of say, well, yeah, I want to build up a following. I want people to know who I am, whatever that means. And they create false versions of themselves that they are not only perpetrating on social media, but they're perpetrating ideally with someone who, again, in those pods may have a very serious and different reason for being there.
Yeah. Let's move on. You also watch Married at First Sight, and this audio is courtesy of Lifetime.
There seems to be a lot of tension.
I think it's really hard having to be sitting here with people who treated you poorly and haven't taken any accountability.
Zero.
Some people hid. Brennan, Cam, you did too, and they ran away from the problem. And
how did I run away? I think that's a direct accusation.
Yes,
I can address, right?
Please,
you can.
Please.
How did I run away?
Right after.
Where were you?
How did I run away?
Let me please answer the question.
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble listening to that and just not laughing. I know it's serious. I would assume it's serious. So, okay, tell us about what the heck this is about. And it seems like there was a lot of controversy with this last season about on-camera versus off-camera and authenticity versus duplicity.
Yes, yes.
So talk to us about all that.
Again, all of those things were there. I would say this season was probably the most explosive in terms of the dynamics between the husbands and wives who went through the process. This is a little different than Love is Blind in that you have three experts who were going into cities, scouting probably thousands of people to narrow it down to say, okay, we'll find and try to match up five couples. The couples answer all these questions. They go through the process. They find out if they are selected. And when they do, you have, I believe, 2 weeks before you're getting married. You never get to meet the person until you're standing there on the altar. And then after that, you go on a quick honeymoon, and then there's an 8-week process to determine. You live together sort of in a rented house or a rented apartment and figure out, can we stay together? Were the experts really in sync with how they matched us up? And generally speaking, it's not always successful, but up until this season, you could understand as you were watching the dynamic and see how it was playing out that, okay, yeah, there's something there. Maybe I see what the experts thought, but then life just comes into play and it
sure
throws a monkey wrench in everything. But yeah, this season was really unusual because A, they had the first marriage, or not quite marriage, because literally a bride stepped out, saw her intended husband, and was like, nope, I can't do that.
That's got to be hurtful.
That had never happened yeah before. But yet, Michael, that was his name, he was the most empathetic and gracious person I feel like I've ever seen in my life. Hmm. He handled this situation so well. He had no ill will towards her or anyone else. And I think the team behind the show, the producers, knew, well, wait a minute, we've got to do something because this guy is really great. So they matched him up again with someone else who did end up marrying him, and they went through the process. And unfortunately, their marriage didn't work out. But because he was such a really great person, and the woman that he ended up marrying for real, she was also really engaged and sensitive. And again, they didn't work as a couple, but mm-hmm they worked as really great people together.
Yeah.
That's the only one. The rest of them were just cats in a bag, scratching and clawing and tearing at each other, and no one was happy. And I was surprised, to be quite honest, in watching it, because the show's been around for a number of seasons and it's never been this bad before. And again, I think part of that was, yes, that question of, you know, what's on camera, what's not on camera. There's the social media aspect of it again, because again, the shows are bigger and bigger and they're bigger followings and people are paying attention to it in a different way. So I can't imagine that that would be the reason that I would want to go on a show like this in the first place. Like, ooh, like I've got 30 followers and I want to get to 300,000.
Yeah.
I guess that's the way to do it, but it just doesn't feel, again, like it feels like you're cheating the show and the premise and actually this other person that you're going to be matched up with. And
yeah,
I can't believe, as I'm listening to myself now, I'm granting a lot more heft and seriousness to this whole premise than some of these people are that are actually taking part in it.
Yeah, well, that's got to be part of the fan base. I mean, people, either you're watching it because you think, because you believe in love, you think this could work, or you just like watching train wrecks. I mean, I'm not sure.
Right.
I guess there's a spectrum there.
I'm hoping I'm on the I believe in love
yeah
side. But every once in a while, a good train wreck's
yeah
not bad either.
There you go. Okay. Well, we are going to continue our conversation in just a moment. TT, my favorite reality shows are not on your list. I hope we can still be friends. But we'll talk about what is on your list after we come back. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about film critic T.T. Sternenzi's top reality TV picks. My guest, of course, is film critic T.T. Sternenzi. Okay, T.T., you love Somebody Feed Phil.
Today I'm lucky enough to have Muhammad cook just for me.
We keep doing things until you say stop.
You might be here a while.
This is the most excited I've ever seen anyone over an omelet.
Is that a garlic sauce?
Yes.
I love that so much. What's the name of that sauce?
Garlic mayo, we call it.
Camel milk chocolate.
You know, I want to say,
you can really taste the camel.
Okay, that was courtesy of Netflix. T.T., what makes it fun to watch this guy eat?
Well, first of all, he's not just eating.
Okay.
I think that should be the first part of the description of the show. Like, he is traveling to cities around the world and kind of giving you a chance to kind of walk alongside him as he's meeting people and connecting with people. And again, for Phil Rosenthal, who is the host of the show, it is about those connections that matter the most. He's a fabulously funny guy. He's got this really engaging, almost innocent kind of spirit about him. He cracks dumb, silly jokes. And yes, he does love to eat. So there's all of that is baked into what you're watching, if you'll go along with me with that for a second. But what I really enjoy about it the most is that because he's traveling to all these places, and my wife and I are now starting, now that our kids are out of the house, we're traveling more just as a couple on our own. And when we went to Spain a couple of years ago, we watched the Barcelona episode before we went, and then we watched it again while we were on the trip, and we literally went to one of the spots that he had a meal at. And again, he didn't do a big deal about the meal there, but we found the spot. It was a great little outdoor space. We got there. We had a fabulous meal with another couple that was on our tour, and then we got to meet and talk to the owner. And again, it was halting because he didn't speak a lot of English, and we don't speak any Spanish. But as soon as we said Phil, he was like, yes, yes, Phil. So yeah. we were locked in. We got a picture with him. And again, it was that experience to be able to say, okay, we were kind of following in Phil's footsteps. So now we watch the new season and we were kind of like, well, where do we want to go? We're trying to figure out a next trip. And we're like looking at all the cities that he went to and we're thinking, maybe one of these cities. Yeah. And again, it's like having a tour guide or a travel guide who goes before you, scouts out what you might want to check out, and then you get to kind of follow in his footsteps. And it's so much fun and it's educational.
I'm a little worried about Travel with Rick Steves, the way you talk about this, TT, but Rick Steves has plenty of fans, so I'm sure he'll be fine.
He's got me too, don't
worry. Okay, good. I want to skip ahead. I'm hoping we can come back to some of these other food-related shows, but we have to talk about Moonshiner's Master Distiller.
Time to build us a drink. Remember, presentation is everything. Some people like these nice, pretty glasses.
The one that gets his drink built first gets to pick the glass first.
Mark, you've done started on quality control over there.
My ideal of a cocktail is just taking me a good drink of liquor and chasing her down with a good cold beer.
But at the end of the day, there can only be one winner of the 24 pounds of yeast.
Make a whole lot of bread with that.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so that's courtesy of Discovery. 24 pounds of yeast. What is going on with this show, TT?
I love this show so much. And it's the only show on the list that I have to watch by myself because my wife will not watch it with me. And you can probably understand why when you've listened to the clip.
Yeah.
You're basically taking three guys who are really smart and engaging and interesting guys, but they're backwoods dudes who were moonshiners. And they run a series of contestants through challenges to make a mash, build a still, and to create a spirit. And what they've done is they've taken all of these great elements from all of the food shows like Top Chef and everything else, but they've really focused them on, again, the creation of spirits. And what you get out of it is just, outside of the idea of listening to them, it's just fascinating. Because again, we're in an area where you can go to distilleries, you can go down to Kentucky, and you can stay there for weeks if you want.
Bourbon Trail, all that stuff.
And you can do that. But I like to go now, and again, sort of like the Somebody Feed Phil, when we go on bourbon tours, I'm the guy who's sitting there kind of like, well, what's in your mash? How much, what are you putting in? How much sugar? What kind of sugar are you using? But I'm asking all these questions like I know what I'm doing. You would never want me to make a spirit at all. But I have enough information now, and I've watched every single episode. I've watched some of them more than once. I can't believe I'm admitting that to anyone, but I have.
It's just us. It's just the two of us in this studio.
There's just, again, I talk about these guys and the talent and the knowledge that they have. Like, they can take a bottle of spirits with no label at all, shake it, and be able to tell you the proof. And they can usually do that with and not be more than like a point or two off.
Wow.
Which is fascinating. Like, that level of understanding and being able to, again, we're talking about complex chemistry and science here.
Yeah.
They can do that. So the next time we think about moonshiners, we should also think about the idea that these guys are really high-level scientists as well.
Yeah.
And what they do beyond how they might talk or what they look like, they're operating on a level that few of us will ever understand.
But the prize is a pile of yeast?
For that particular challenge.
Okay. Oh, okay, okay.
For that challenge.
Like the whole...
Generally speaking, okay. If you win, you earn the title of Master Distiller for whatever spirit you're making for that episode. And what I also love about the show, which very rarely gets talked about, is the idea that it's really a much more diverse show than you would think. Like I said, they have three contestants. There have been a number of women who've won, people of color. And they take people who have backgrounds, whether they are just, you know, backyard distillers or people that are actually working for real distilleries. You get all sorts of people that are on the show. And like I said, they're from all over the country. So it's a great show. And the ingenuity and the creativity in creating these spirits, you get to learn about all of that. And I guarantee you watch a couple of episodes, you're not going to just sit back and drink your spiced rum or whatever it is that you love, your spirit of choice. You won't ever think about it in the same way again.
Okay. I'm sold. I'm going to have to watch it. That's for sure. Well, let's back up to one on your list. This is one that a lot of our listeners might be familiar with. You also watch Top Chef.
It's more than just the cooking.
I'm addicted.
And your time starts. Go back.
It's really hard, man. I can't lie.
Top Chef is more than a food competition. It's a mental competition.
All the fear and anxiety is back.
It's not refined enough.
The fish is overcooked.
You have got to start cooking to win.
This isn't going to be easy. At the end of this, there's only one person left. You got to make sure it's you.
That audio is courtesy of Bravo. TT, I think this is one of the, I mean, it's not one of the OGs, but it's certainly one of the original cooking reality shows. But
sure.
Tell us the premise for folks who might not be familiar.
Yeah. I mean, Top Chef was probably the first show that my wife and I started watching, excuse me, even before we got married.
Mm-hmm. And it is a love story.
It is, yes, a part of our love story. We both love food. We love to cook. But yeah, they bring in, I believe, 15 chefs every season from all over the country and now even all over the world, take them to a city and run them through challenges based on foods and, you know, whatever might be relevant within that particular city or that region. These challenges get more interesting and more difficult as you go along because they want to find the best of the best. And again, the creativity and the ingenuity of being able to figure out on the spot with limited ingredients and limited time, how do you put a meal together that people are going to really enjoy and that will spark something in them is fascinating. And again, what you're getting out of the show is all of these chefs who go through this process, whether they win or lose, were all really strong chefs in their communities that they come from. And again, when I talk about the travel aspect of it, we love to go to these cities now and sort of say, well, wait a minute, if we're in Atlanta, who was the chef from Atlanta from a few seasons ago on Top Chef who we kind of like some of their stuff? Ooh, maybe we should go to their restaurant and check out and see what they're doing. Because you can do that, or just because of the way the whole food culture on television and these reality shows has blown up, some of these chefs probably are not even really working as chefs anymore. They are personalities on other competition shows. They are hosting their own food and travel shows, whatever the case may be. And that you understand and appreciate that they deserve those roles because they can do something and think about food and ingredients in a way that, again, few people can. And why wouldn't you want to spend time with them? I think that's the real question. These are the kinds of people that we should be interested in, we should be fascinated by, maybe we should put on pedestals in a way. Probably not going to say that about the dating show folks, but I will say that about Top Chef and Next Level Chef and even Master Distiller.
Yeah. Well, I want to bring us full circle. You mentioned the documentary filmmaker, the late Julia Reichert. Tell us again just briefly when that event is.
That event is going to be Thursday night at the CAC. The screening will start at 6:30. Doors will open at 6. It'll be a beautiful, fascinating time. Her husband, Steve Bogner, will be with us. There will be filmmakers from the community and throughout the region who knew and worked with them. And it really will be a great celebration of Julia's life. So yeah. I'm thrilled and excited that we're able to do this.
And a much classier take on real life everything.
Yes. Okay. Although there's some great humor and fun in some of the footage that we see of Julia's life as well.
Okay. Well, I've been talking with film critic T.T. Stern-Enzi. You can read his essay about his top reality TV picks on our website, WVXU.org. Thanks so much for being here, T.T.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.